This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And a beautiful Monday morning here in Portland. It's bizarre walking into the studio today, walking into work. The sun looked like, you know, a harvest moon. I mean, it was just this big red ball hanging, you know, a couple inches above the horizon, and or a couple degrees above the horizon. And it's because of all the forest fires. You know, California's getting all this publicity about their forest fires, but Oregon is on fire too, as is Washington State, as is British Columbia, as is much of Canada, as is much of the American West. And, you know, it's, and now Nature just came out with a report on this, how this is happening all over the world. So anyhow, we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about today. I want to start off with the question, should Democrats be talking about impeachment? And will Trump be impeached or will he resign? And for that matter, if he's impeached, will he leave office? In our second hour, we're going to ask the question, is it time to reclaim the word socialism? And James Robbins is going to be with us. He wants to save Confederate monuments. This should be an interesting conversation in our second hour. And, you know, so we've got a lot to talk about. I've got a new book. I've been working on this book for a while now. And I just yesterday sent off to the publisher what I think is the final first draft of the book. You know, I need to get editorial feedback back from the publisher, but we're planning on publishing this book in the spring. And we need your help coming up with a title for it. The book is about the history of gun violence, or history of the use of guns in the United States, starting out with the Native American genocide and then the use of guns to enforce slavery via the slave patrols, and the, you know, just basically the, you know, guns as an intrinsic part of American history. And then, you know, it gets into this whole issue of, you know, why we have this bizarre gun culture and how it all works and what do we do with it and all, you know, and how do we change it? What are the solutions? And you know, if you've listened to my program a lot, you already know basically what I'm suggesting is solutions. But we need your help coming up with a title. Our working title so far has been Shot Dead, The Hidden History of Guns in the United States or Gun Violence or the Gun Culture. But we've got a SurveyMonkey survey, where you can vote on what you think would be the best title and subtitle. And you can even come up with something that's not on our list. And there's links to that. There should be a link on our homepage. There is a link on our, we have tweeted out a link, so on the Tom Hartman, Tom_Hartman Twitter feed, and on Facebook. So check it out and start voting what you think should be the name of Tom's next book. And my next book. So it's, you know, I'm very excited. This is a really good book. When I submitted it to the publisher, you know, one of the big cheeses at the publishing house read the book and called me up and said, wow, I learned stuff I didn't even know, and I thought I knew all about this topic. So anyhow, it's the SurveyMonkey link over on Twitter, Facebook, and on our homepage at TomHartman.com. Should Democrats be talking about impeachment? This is a, I think, frankly, a very, very important question. And, you know, at a certain level, we have in our party, in the Democratic Party, you know, a fair amount of denial going on, right? Oh, it's not so bad, or, oh, you know, it is terrible, but you can't just talk about that. If you run on impeachment, that's just going to get the Republicans out there voting against you, is one theory. I've never been a big fan of the voting against theory, although Trump is causing me to slightly recalibrate my thinking on it. But broadly speaking, I think people tend to go to the polls because they want to vote for something rather than against it. Even when it's a polar opposite, you know, you could say, well, you know, people didn't vote for Mike Dukakis because, you know, he wouldn't say that he wanted to execute the guy who in the theoretical question, you know, the hypothetical question, you know, would you want to execute a man who raped and murdered your wife, Kitty? And he was like, well, I don't know. I'd have to think about that, you know, in words to that effect, sort of thing. And it some people say it cost him in the election. I would say it wasn't that they voted, and just to talk about that one issue, right? Because there was a whole bunch of things, but and the big one, of course, was the Willie Horton ad. Be scared of black people because Michael Dukakis wants to let them out and let them go come kill you and all this kind of stuff. I mean, that was really the undercurrent in that election in 1988. But I don't think that a lot of people turned out and voted against Dukakis. I think that to the extent that you know, the death penalty was an issue for them, they were voting for Bush because he was in favor of it. And Dukakis, you know, whether he'd been opposed to it or whether he had simply been, you know, really quiet about it, I don't think it would have mattered a whole great deal. So, but, you know, this is a debate. This is a really serious debate that's going on inside the Democratic Party right now. You've got Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer have weighed in on it or are weighing in on it. And, you know, the Democrats are, you know, broadly speaking, the Democratic position, the party position is, you know, we don't have control of the House. We don't have control of the Senate. We don't have, you know, the 2/3 of the Senate necessary to convict. So, you know, you'd have a Bill Clinton, Andrew Johnson situation where you might impeach him in the House, but nothing happens in the Senate. So why even bother? And we don't control the House. So, you know, right now, I mean, Paul Ryan wouldn't even allow a vote on it, although there's a very good chance Democrats will control the House after this election in November. And so in January, after January 20th, when everybody is sworn in, should we start talking about impeachment? And, you know, what I've been saying up to this point is let's wait for the Mueller inquiry to come out. And I think it's going to get real interesting with Paul Manafort's second trial, because everything that I'm reading about this, and we haven't seen the public document dump and all that kind of stuff, and that won't happen until the trial actually starts. But everything that we have heard so far suggests that Manafort's second trial is going to be about his work with Russian oligarchs and in Ukraine, and Ukrainian oligarchs, and their links to the Trump campaign. So, you know, if they get this conviction here, this second trial is going to be fascinating. And so there is an argument to be made that we should simply wait until the Mueller investigation comes in and we can all look at what happened. But I think that there's more than enough evidence right now. I mean, you know, there have been several cases of this, but when Al Gore's campaign was given a copy of the debate notes for George W. Bush, they called the FBI. They said, we're not even going to open the book. We're not even going to look at it. Now, truth be told, they thought maybe they were being punked and it was phony debate notes, or it was debate notes that would cause them to change their strategy in a way that would hurt them. Or maybe it was the real thing and it was just exactly what they needed to win the election, but they weren't willing to cheat. And that was, by the way, from a source in Texas. It wasn't from a source in Russia. So, and this isn't the first time it happened, by the way. We know that George Herbert Walker Bush enthusiastically took Jimmy Carter's debate notes. But there was another Democrat, I think it might have been Bill Clinton, who got a set of debate notes and also called the FBI. This has happened twice. And so maybe it's just Democrats who have, you know, basically high moral standards. But taking debate notes from a foreign government, and I think you'd be hard-pressed not to know that that was what was going on, given the email chain. I realize Giuliani's out there lying about this, but, you know, given that, I think that it's pretty important to say, no, we don't want this stuff. So should the Democrats be talking about impeachment? And if so, how? Maybe that's the most important question. You know, should be, because I think that the topic is a big topic. I think that it really cracks open the larger issue of corruption and the larger issue of collusion, the larger issue of conspiracy to defraud the United States and you know, frankly, to defraud all of us. We had an election, you know, stolen from us. Now, there's a whole bunch of different things that happened. You had a weak candidate. You had Jim Comey coming out 2 weeks before the election and talking about Hillary's emails. I mean, all this stuff, any one of these things could have provided the margin of victory or not. You had voter suppression, but you also had a foreign government interfering.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls after this. It's 16 minutes past the hour. And welcome back. And let's see here. Mike watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Mike, thanks for in Altoona, Florida. Hey, thanks, Mike. Hey, Mike, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up? Mike on Hybrid One? There we go. I'm sorry, Mike, start over.
Okay. Really enjoy the show. Really enjoy the books.
Thank you.
And your reading, and glad to see that intellectualism is not dead. And for those speaking, for those of us who've had a real hard time since Donald Trump's been elected and dealing with it and not hating our friends and family, I just left the early voting, and you were also NRA, and that's a subject I wanted to go to, is I just voted yes on the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act, which was incidentally signed by Rick Scott, but the NRA sued him about it.
Hmm.
And I wasn't real crazy about the millage because, you know, schools being defunded is a whole nother subject. But it does give the police the right to take away guns when you act crazy or threaten mm-hmm. people with them. And,
yeah, it's a
vote yes on that.
It's a small step, but it's a step.
Yeah. And me being a previous NRA member and a gun owner myself, you
mm-hmm.
know. But, dude, we just can't have AR-15s, who needs those, or band stock, you know, bomb stocks and all that. You know, we don't need machine guns. Anyway, for those of us who are depressed, go down and vote, please. That's what I'll say.
Okay, well said, Mike. Thanks a lot for the call.
All right.
Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. JP in Marietta, Georgia. Hey, JP, thanks for watching us on YouTube. Your thoughts?
Hey, yes, sir. I was wondering, either I've been kind of living in a little bit of a fantasy world and hoping that one day Robert Mueller will come out with both indictments and or articles of impeachment for, you know, anywhere from Jim Jordan to Giuliani to Paul Ryan, you know, who, you know, heard before the campaign, we heard him saying, you know, to keep keep that one conversation quiet about Trump being owned by the Russians, and basically anybody that has, you know, pretty much known that Trump is in their pocket and has tried to derail the investigation by jumping on.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that Trump is the problem that we have with Donald Trump is that I don't think it's so much that he's owned by the Russian government, although there may be a role there to play, particularly the, you know, because Putin apparently mixes oligarchy and governance together, but that he's certainly owned by the Russian mob. And this is the thing that I think is going to probably come out in Manafort's second trial. And a large part of it, I think, has come out in the first trial, is, you know, the extent to which organized crime and billionaires in that part of the world, and it's not just Russia, it's all the Stan country, you know, many of the former Soviet Union satellite states, you know, that corruption is just rampant, particularly corruption around fossil fuels, around oil. And it's just a matter of time before, you know, well, back to Trump, that when, after his multiple bankruptcies, he desperately needed cash. And where did he get that? He got it from Russian oligarchs. I mean, you got one of his buildings is 25% apartments owned by Russians that are, you know, constantly being churned. You could take a $1 or $2 million apartment or condo and flip it 5 or 6 times in the course of a year and make $1 million profit once, make $1 million loss the next time, profit, loss, back and forth and back and forth. And every single time you do that, you're just laundering more money. So we'll see when this comes out. JP, thanks for the call. It's 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And wow, lots of calls. Lots of people want to talk about this stuff. I am glad to see it. Chris in Salem, Oregon. Hey, Chris, thanks for listening to X-Ray FM. What's up?
You know, Tom, Paul Krugman wrote a really great piece, and you might cover it later in the show just over the weekend, on how a lot of mainstream Republicans aren't vociferously denouncing Trump enough. And, you know, him, and I've kind of posited this as well, and if do we have any incidences in history where it's happened, would Republicans talk about, like, freedom and less government? Do you think deep down, like, in their core convictions, would they forego, quote, democracy and freedom if the autocrat of their choice was for lower taxes and was a Christian, white, male, and was like a tough guy? Do you think deep down in their hearts they would resign themselves to autocracy if it was their guy?
I think that's true of about 20% of the electorate, perhaps as many as 40% of Republicans. The Republic, you know, this authoritarianism, and thank you for the call. John Dean wrote a book called Conservatives Without Conscience. And it was based on this extraordinary research on authoritarianism that was published. Actually, there's a whole series of these studies published between the 1950s and the 1980s, where they looked at the authoritarian mindset. And, you know, yes, you have there are authoritarian leaders out there. And, you know, the classic fascists, you know, obviously we all know who they are. But there are also authoritarian followers. There are people who are authoritarians, and in their own homes, they typically are authoritarian leaders. That is, they embrace the strong father model of both a family and a country, whereas most of us embrace the nurturing family model. That's about 80% of us embrace the nurturing family model, which is basically the governing philosophy of the Democratic Party. We're all in this together. We're a nurturing family. We're helping each other out, all that kind of thing. Whereas the strong father model is, you know, everybody bows down to the father. The father, you know, the strong father, the tyrant, as it were, the autocrat, knows what's best, right? Father knows best. And if 20% of the population is essentially wired for autocracy, and that's the number that keeps popping up, and that's John Dean talks about that, then the political party that mostly embraces autocracy is going, you know, most of those people, that 20% of people, are going to migrate to that party. And if the Republican Party represents about a third of America, but they've got all that 40% of America that are authoritarians, I mean, it's conceivable that 100% of the Republican Party could embrace authoritarianism. But I think that probably it's 40-50%, about half of Republicans, you know, all at the end of the day would be real happy if Donald Trump simply became a dictator. And he's certainly moving in that direction, and they're not sneezing. They're not concerned about it. Fox News is all down with it. Everybody's all in favor of it. So, you know, anyhow. Impeachment. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Hey, not too much, Tom. Bear with me. I'm in the smoke as well, and it's really messing up my allergies. But the, I don't think Democrats really should talk a whole lot about impeachment. I'll tell you why. There's a theory I've been working on for a while in America called, I call it inimical binarism, or a binary that's inappropriate. And just one example of it is like the reaction to Bo Bergdahl. I mean, think about it. We put Bo Bergdahl on trial for a crime of misbehavior before the enemy that carries a death sentence. And I even know some liberals that were like, okay with that. I mean, the truth is in the middle, all right? I mean, you know, if you're a captive of the Taliban for 10 years and then you come home and you face a trial that carries a death sentence, I mean, that's pretty severe. And, you know, with Trump, I think if we talk too much about impeachment, it's going to come off as a political device, a political, you know, just a political ploy. When in fact,
Dave, impeachment is a law and order. Impeachment is a political, you know, it's a political solution that was built into the Constitution because there's no legal solution built into the Constitution to hold a president accountable outside of the courts, which, you know, Andrew Jackson demonstrated twice he ignored the Supreme Court.
Yeah, but I don't, you know, if it looks like a cheap ploy, as some sort of political game, the swamp, as they say. I heard a Trump supporter this weekend claim that John Brennan voted for communists in the past. I mean, I've met John Brennan. There's absolutely no fact.
Well, you know, John Brennan oversaw torture. John Brennan, you know, oversaw rendition. He's not, you know, pure as the driven snow or whatever. He's not. Yeah, he's speaking out against Trump, and there's a certain amount of my enemy. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. But you know, let's keep this in context. So you think we shouldn't talk about impeachment yet?
No, I think we should talk about, you know, everyone subject to the law.
Okay,
everyone.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll be back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after this. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Help us title my newest book. I've got a book coming out in the spring. It's about gun violence and the history of gun violence in the United States, where it came from, what can we do about it. And we tweeted about, I don't know, 30 minutes ago. You can find it on my Twitter feed. We tweeted a link to a SurveyMonkey survey so that you can offer your suggestions for titles. And it's also on our Facebook link, and it's also on our homepage. So check it out. In the meantime, we're asking the question, should the Democratic Party be talking about impeachment? Richard in Chicago. Hey, Richard, thanks for listening to Chicago's Progressive Talk. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, first, I was just going to start off, the arming of America. I imagine you read that for your book. I would.
I don't think I did.
Oh, that was the one they went after because the author couldn't produce estates. You know, he looked at the states to see the listing. They listed everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said there weren't many guns. So they tried to hook him on that. But it was such a small point of it. You know, he had the letters from Washington about militias and newspaper articles for 50 years about how silly they were. And it's an excellent book.
Cool.
I only got up to about the 1830s, and I, for some reason, stopped reading it. But it was it's a good one. But the reason I called was about it's so interesting that you know, the Republicans can go lock them up, do all this sort of stuff, and we're debating. It's a good debate whether or not we should go after impeachment or talk about impeachment. And
right.
I think it's a teachable moment. It's legal. If we ought to couch it in the terms of if real crimes were perpetrated, would the Republicans impeach him? I mean, it's a great thing for mobilizing our base,
if there was even a whisper in 1992 that Bill Clinton had conspired with Russia to get himself elected and that they had actually actively helped him get elected, he would have been impeached in a nanosecond.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. Is see, they're bloodthirsty, and we're having a debate like we're the remember the cartoon with the chipmunks. You know, excuse me. You know, I mean, it's a legitimate thing, and we shouldn't go overboard on it, but we should use it to explain that these Republicans won't even investigate it. They won't fund cyber monies for cyber protections. You know, it's a gift. So I hopefully will do it, but do it in a way that isn't easily dismissed.
Yeah, and I think that's the key to it, Richard, and I think you've nailed it there, and that is that when we talk about impeachment, we always need in the same sentence to mention an actual crime, you know, the conspiracy to collude with a foreign country. That's a crime in and of itself. I mean, you know, whether any collusion actually happened, conspiring to commit a crime is a crime. And it looks to me like the actual conspiracy was executed, that they did, you know, collude, and then they engaged in a cover-up. So, excellent point. Well, Richard, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say that, you know, we have to show some toughness. You know, no one's going to follow Democrats if they continue to be meek.
Yeah.
They're not. This other side is rabid.
I agree. We need to take names and kick ass. I'm totally with you. Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Good to hear from you. Brent in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Brent, what's up?
Hey, Tom. So I tend to think that we likely should not, unless barring we get some relatively heavy support from his supporters. So if the people who voted for him find out the Mueller investigation comes out and they turn against him, then absolutely. But as long as they stick with him, I don't think that we should, because I think that it sets a pretty horrible precedent. And I do think that it divides the nation further. They will say, see, we got our guy, and you got rid of him. And yeah. it just sets up nasty politics for a long time. I know you said 20% of people like authoritarianism, and I'm sure there's some great research in that area to come up with that number, but it would seem to me that the number should be radically higher, because mammals are generally tribal with an alpha male at the lead.
Well, actually, in a lot of species, it's an alpha female, wolves being probably the most famous example. But yeah, I get what you're saying, Brent. I think that if you look at the difference between the Nixon impeachment, which didn't happen because he resigned, but it was in process. Four articles of impeachment were filed in the House of Representatives, and they were going to a vote the day that he resigned. And versus the Clinton impeachment, where Clinton didn't resign and he suffered through the process. I think that the reason why even Republicans turned on Nixon was that the vast majority of Americans were of the opinion that he had committed impeachable crimes. And now you've got a situation where if it weren't for Fox News and right-wing hate radio, I think we would be there right now. I think America would be horrified. But Fox News has been throwing so much chum in the water, so much distraction, so much denial. They are so selective in their coverage. They don't cover the things that look bad for Trump. They do cover, and then they cover these wacky conspiracy theories to get everybody all bent out of shape and whatnot, that at least the Republican Party, which mostly uses Fox and right-wing hate radio as its go-to source for what they think is news, they don't yet know what has happened, what this guy has done. So the question, I guess the debate becomes, are we, much like Ken Starr and Bill Clinton, are we just, because Bill Clinton, his popularity with Democrats radically increased during the time of his impeachment. Are we simply helping Trump by talking about impeachment? Or is there, or in the case of Clinton, I think, the people who said no just thought that, a BJ was not worth impeaching somebody over. It was something that had probably happened with the vast majority of presidents, some, similar circumstances. But on the other hand, with Nixon, what we saw was that if you can demonstrate that there's an actual crime there, the people will get into place. And the problem with the Fox News viewers is that they are not informed. They don't know what the actual issues are. Fox News does a really good job of keeping them in the dark. And
don't
so,
you think the best taught lesson is a self-taught lesson? Perhaps it might hurt the whole country, but if he turns the economy really to the South in a drastic way that hurts their voters, maybe they'll listen.
Yeah, well, I think that's already starting to happen. Excellent point, Brent. Brent, thank you for the call. Sam in Houston, Texas. Hey, Sam, what's up? Sam in Houston, Texas? Okay, Shira, Sam is on line 6. You can see what's going on with Sam. Let's try Anita in San Antonio, Texas. Texas to Texas. Hey, Anita.
Texas. Hey, Tom, good morning. Good afternoon. Yeah, I don't think we have to talk about impeachment. I don't think we have to run on impeachment. We just need to run on holding him accountable. This is the most corrupt administration probably in American history. We have to, the Republicans are not holding him accountable. We have to run on holding him accountable. I think the American people would want that.
But isn't the ultimate statement of accountability an impeachment?
Well, eventually, but people just say accountable instead of impeachment. I think the word impeachment, just saying that before, accountable suggests that we're going to listen to the evidence. We're going to hold him accountable for not just Russia, but for the Emoluments Clause, for all the corrupt things that his administration is doing. And I believe even his supporters kind of want him to have some checks on him. Because really they voted for him because he's a racist and he uses a bullhorn instead of a dog whistle.
I think a good chunk of his base voted for him for that reason, but I think that the people, and it's a sizable cohort of the population, by the way, who voted twice for Obama and then voted for Trump, voted for Obama because they wanted hope and change, and they voted for Trump because they wanted hope and change. He promised that he wasn't going to mess with Social Security and Medicare. He was going to bring our jobs back home and change our trade policies. This is pretty straightforward.
I don't believe that because there was a study, and I can't remember, it was Yahoo or something did a study that showed the people that voted for Obama and then voted for Trump were almost like contrarians, where they were voting for whoever they felt would upset the system.
That's my point. By upset the system, I'm talking about
they believe.
He was going to change. He campaigned on blowing up neoliberalism. He said he was going to raise taxes on rich people. He was going to change our trade policies. He was going to have medical help. You know, he was going to have a program that was better and cheaper than Obamacare that covered all Americans. I mean, these are the things he campaigned on.
But it was so ridiculous that these people were paying any.
But low information voters, Anita, bought it.
No, I don't believe they cared about the social.
I know people who did. I sat and talked with these people.
I'm sure there's a small percentage of people that might have. But I'm telling you here, I have met many Trump supporters. I've not met one that didn't vote for him because of some sort of racial overtones in his.
I wonder if that's the difference between Texas and Washington, D.C., because all the people I was meeting were, you know, at the marina in Washington, D.C., And
I think if you dug a little deeper with them, even you might say, "Well, how do you feel about affirmative action? Do you feel that white people are discriminated against?" And I guarantee you, you'll find some, you know.
Yeah, although a lot of them are in the military, where that's less of an issue. But okay, I get what you're saying, Nita, and I don't want to debate you on it. I think that probably we're both right at some level. Thank you so much, and I appreciate the call, Marta in Big Bear Lake, California. Hey, Marta, what's up?
Tom, I am once again so impressed with how your program connects the dots. And I agree that we should talk about impeachment. But if we want to win and do the right thing, remember that Obama and FDR won by uniting Americans across racial and ethnic lines. Maybe you can agree or disagree. I think you would probably agree, but feel free to debate me or whatever.
Well, it's not a debate. I think, you know, in the case of FDR, that was a time when very few black people in America could vote. We still were operating under Jim Crow. But FDR, maybe it was Harry Truman who integrated the army. But whatever. Yeah.
He talked about, you know, economic issues and so I
yes.
would say issues that these are modern times. We have new ways of looking at things, but some of the issues that we can unite Americans on are issues that affect us all: economic, trade, the Walmart economy, environmental devastation, and that's global warming, but also air quality and poor water quality.
Marta, I got to run, but thank you for the call. Very well said. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after this. And welcome back. Sean in McKinney, Texas. Hey, Sean, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I was just calling because the last few days I've been wanting to call, but I haven't been able to because of work. But on Thursday, you were talking about President John Adams a lot in relation to Trump. And you said that he was like a mini dictator.
Yep.
And I just wanted to call and disagree with you vehemently on that point. He did sign the Alien and Sedition Act.
He didn't just sign it. He campaigned for it. And he threw Benjamin Franklin Bok in jail the day before the law even came into effect. His own party rejected him based on this. His vice president, Thomas Jefferson, left town and literally for the rest of the presidency would not meet with John Adams or talk with John Adams. I mean, he threw 34 newspaper publishers in prison. How is that not dictatorial?
But that's not true.
That is true.
What happened was he, first of all, the Federalist Congress was pushing him to sign. He was reluctant to sign that bill.
Not true. Not true. His wife Abigail was one of the principal advocates of it, and in fact, John Adams had a thing, and I encourage you to Google this. You'll find, you know, it should be easy to find. John Adams had a thing where whenever he came into a town, the local militia had to come out and give him a cannon salute, and everybody had to shout, "God long live President Adams," or no, "God bless President Adams," and there was a guy named Luther Baldwin, who was sitting in a bar in Trenton, New Jersey, in 1790, late 1798, maybe it was early 1799, and Adams and Abigail came through, And Luther Burbank said, "Ah, they're shooting the cannons because President Adams is coming through. They can shoot him in the arse for all I care." And the bartender, the bar owner, was a Federalist, and he called the police. And Luther Burbank spent the next year in prison under the Alien and Sedition Act because he said that about John Adams. And this was something that Abigail was all over this. She did not, you know, and his the thing that offended him when Benjamin Franklin Bach published his op-ed in the Aurora was that Bach called him old, querulous, toothless, and balding. These are not the behaviors of a man who believes in democracy.
No, you're right. I mean, you're right that Abigail Adams did push for it. She was trying to persuade her husband. But even then, okay, I mean, the way I look at it is like this. That is one bad thing that President Adams did. He did a lot of good things. The majority of the things that he did were good. I mean, if we look at it from that point of view, we can look at it, well, Franklin Roosevelt in turn.
What are the good things he did as president?
Well, first of all, he went ahead and he kept us out of war with Spain and France because he was trying to sign a peace treaty with France because of the quasi-war. And, you know, Vice President Thomas Jefferson went to the French ambassador and was trying to get him to stall those peace talks, where they wouldn't even talk to the emissaries that President Adams sent over there. He stopped a war with Spain because Alexander Hamilton wanted to take the land from Spain, which was going to cause a war. They were being backed by Venezuela. Adams said, "No, I'm not even going to meet with the ambassador from Venezuela." Lastly, he went ahead and when they were trying to execute people because of the Pride Rebellion,
yeah.
Adam said, "No, absolutely not."
Okay, Sean, just a quick question, Sean. We're just changing our board here. Can you hear that music in the background?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Sean, I got to run. Thank you for the call. John Adams did some good stuff. We'll be right back. Now I can hear myself. Tony, watching Free Speech TV in Chatsworth, California. Tony, you're on the air. What's up?
Well, I just wanted I came across your program on TV just now, and I'm listening to your callers, and it really scares me that the lack of intelligence on everybody that's calling it. Not saying I'm brilliant. I'm 74 years old, and I've been around the block, but just one big point. Everybody has an opinion, but the ultimate answer is the stock market. And right now the stock market is on the break of breaking out and making a brand new high. It's been up over 7,000 points since Mr. Trump has been elected.
No, it's not.
Don't get me wrong.
It's up a couple thousand points since Trump was elected. But, Tony, you give me a trillion and a half dollar credit card, I can show you living large.
Wait. It was 18,000. It's at 25. And so it's
okay.
7,000 points. You guys are
again, I'll say, Tony, you give me $1.5 trillion credit card, I can show you what it looks like to live large. A bubble, Tony. Beyond that, why is the stock market any metric of anything? Fewer than 40% of Americans own stock, and 80% of stock is owned by the top 7% of Americans.
Yeah, well, it's still, opinions are often wrong, but the stock market is never wrong, and I don't believe that.
So if the stock market crashes, then you're going to turn on Trump, Tony?
Pardon me?
If the stock market crashes, you're going to turn on Trump?
No, because I'm just...
Okay, so it's not the stock market.
First of all, it's not going to crash.
But if it did...
Too many economic... And don't pull that debt thing, because Obama is the one that doubled this trillion-dollar debt.
By doing what?
Responsible Democrats.
Obama doubled the debt, Tony, by putting George Bush's wars, which were not on the debt, they were just on the credit card, into the budget.
You're just making up stories.
No, I'm serious, Tony. You can find this. There's no shortage of sources for this. When Trump came into office, he had a balanced budget. Bill Clinton left a balanced budget in 2000. I'm sorry, Bush. When Bush came into office, he had a balanced budget. Bush did a massive tax cut that threw us into it. This is a multi-trillion dollar deficit as a result of Bush's tax cut. Then we had another $4 trillion added because of two illegal wars that Bush lied us into. Obama inherited that stuff and decided to put it on the budget so that to be honest about accounting. And you're saying Obama raised, tell me what did Obama spend money on that raised the deficit? I just gave you $6 trillion that Bush put on the deficit. What did Obama do?
Well, he gave over $1 billion to the Iranians under the table.
A billion is nothing. We're talking a trillion.
To the Hamas.
And B, Tony, he didn't give Iran anything. That was Iran's money that was frozen in U.S. banks that we had no claim to.
Yeah, let me ask you another question, Mr. Hartman. Where do you think this market, and where do you think economically, politically, we would be with if Hillary Clinton would have won?
That's not the point right now, Tony.
No,
the point. No, it's not. The question is, has Donald Trump committed crimes worthy of impeachment? You and I are debating whether he's mismanaging the economy. But I'm asking the question, has he committed crimes worthy of impeachment? And I'm telling you, when a campaign says to a foreign government, yes, I love it, give me intelligence on my opponent, that campaign is so corrupt, it does not deserve to govern our nation.
You know what? He couldn't be corrupt because what has he got? He's got people in there, just regular people. Do you
think... You know what? Wilbur Ross, he says he's worth $5 billion. He's a regular person. Betsy DeVos with 10 mega yachts is a regular person. Come on. Give me a break, Tony. The swamp is stinking with people that Trump has put into office. Go back and look at Forbes magazine, the profile that they just did of Wilbur Ross, our commerce secretary, the guy who went to Saudi Arabia and said, gee, it's amazing, there's not a single sign, protesting the government. Well, that's because they execute you if there are. Wilbur Ross claimed he was worth $5 billion. It turns out he's worth $800 million. And Forbes magazine said the guy's a grifter. You've got, Betsy DeVos, who doesn't know what she's doing except that she wants to destroy public education in the United States. I don't see why you are down with destroying public education, Tony. Or is it because, public education is available to poor people and people of color?
Stop with the poor people. Stop with it. You know what? Public education is a farce. It's a farce.
It has been since Reagan started defunding it, yeah. In fact, let me just play for you. This is going to be on the 360, right? Tony, this is, you remember Bill Bennett?
Yeah, but let's talk.
Bill Bennett was Ronald Reagan's Secretary of Education, and
you're pulling out all the mistakes of everyone in the past.
Yeah, I am. Here's what Bill Bennett had to say.
But I do know that it's true that if you wanted to reduce crime, you could, if that were your sole purpose, you could abort every black baby in this country and your crime rate would go down.
That was Ronald Reagan's Secretary of Education. Brilliant. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.